Welcome, everybody, to Mormons on Mushrooms. Just a reminder that this is a storytelling podcast where we discuss alternative methods for healing from trauma and seeking a more fulfilling life. A lot of times on the podcast, we discuss triggering topics, and we ask that you make your personal mental health top priority. Lastly, the opinions offered by our guests don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the hosts. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy.
We can start with that. You know, dealing with kids getting in, my daughter got in a bike accident and on a mountain bike. It was her first ever mountain bike practice and got in an accident. And so I've been awake since, you know, I think I was up since 2 a.m. Two nights in a row. So two nights ago, I had to submit my papers for the quarter. And I was just feeling good. And once I submitted it, I just didn't want to go to sleep. So I stayed up till 2. And then last night, for different reasons, was in the ER until 1. Man, the American medical system is just, it's a deal. We don't have to get into the detail. We're not going to do a podcast on the Western medical system. But I'm just, you know, it's frustrating. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know. It's just, yeah, so kind of dealing with that today. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Well, I mean, I can relate. I don't have health insurance, and because I'm self-employed and being a single mom of three, it's an absolute joke. I'm pretty sure I have like, you know, at least a little sum of money that's in collections right now that I'm just like, how long do I have before I have to pay this before it hits my credit? Because medical bills just add up so quickly.
How do you deal with it without insurance? Because like, I mean, even yesterday, I was so annoyed. I mean, here is my daughter broken and bleeding, and the doctor hasn't even seen her yet. And here they are shoving forms at us, like payment plans and this. And it's like, at least like stitch her up first. I mean,
right. Yeah. I mean, in order to like buy health insurance for me and my kids, it would be like a second mortgage almost, you know, it would be ridiculous. And so I just haven't done it, but it's like, it sucks either way. You know, like I used to be like so petrified of the idea of not having health insurance. And then I haven't had it for probably 5 years. And I'm like, it sucks. You know, if I had it, it would suck. If I didn't have it, it would suck. There was a portion of time that we lived in Switzerland and the healthcare there, I was like, good God, what have we been missing out on? You know, just like really small doctor's offices and really like personable. And I was like, man, I could get used to this.
Well, and that's what I was thinking yesterday. Like, so we have all these big, giant, you know, some of them are beautiful, some of our medical facilities, especially in like Utah. Like Utah has like some really nice hospitals. And here in LA, no different. I mean, the hospitals near us are pretty nice. But we go in, and the ER is full of people outside. No one has a room. Everyone's just like in the hallway. And it feels like a third world country, even though we have these nice facilities. They have one ER doctor patrolling the floor at night. And so it's like, and everyone's just walking around. All the nurses, all they're doing, no one's like checking on us. They're just going and documenting because they're worried about getting sued and they're worried about insurance companies. And so that double like whammy of like, we have to document everything to get paid by the insurance and we don't want to get sued. All they're doing is typing and documenting. They go from one computer to the next and they're just typing notes all the time. Yeah. It's like, we're lost. This system, right. I don't know. I don't want to get too political. I mean, but like, we're just, it's a broken system that we're living in. And I guess I'm kind of sick of it.
I know. Yeah. Have you read the book, When Breath Becomes Air?
No, but just the title alone, I'm like,
I know. This book. I know. It's beautiful. I actually read it not too long ago, and it's about this guy who was a neurosurgeon, and he ended up passing away from cancer. But he, it's almost like this insider perspective of what it's like to be a doctor. and how dehumanizing like a lot of the system is. And then he ends up being the one that's the client, right? You know, who then has to go through the treatments that he's been, you know, the one on the other end of it for so many years. But it's really, really beautiful and like very eye opening. And I'm like, I feel like every person in the medical system needs to read this. But this is not the point of our podcast. We are going on a tangent.
No, but to kind of maybe this will, let me take it in another thread and maybe it circles around to what we're going to talk about, even though we don't have a topic. But, you know, one of the papers I just submitted, I had this class on technology and psyche, and the paper like was about getting back to a slower rhythm of life. Like there was one quote I heard in a podcast that a friend had sent where, the guest was talking about how we, you know, think of like our nervous systems and how we're always matching up. Like we're always syncing up our nervous systems, right? With other people, like we're co-regulating. We either, you know, like with the people we're with our family, we're like, we're apes who are co-regulating our nervous systems. And what we're engaging with, we're matching its rhythm. And so if what we're engaging with is our devices and our, you know, technology and our cars and our offices, and we're matching the rhythm of this frenzied, manic Western pace. Mm-hmm. And so he was just calling for a return to like a geologic speed of like caterpillars and rocks and stones and trees. And like, and when he, as he's describing it, I was like, I just didn't realize how much I craved slowness and like,
yeah,
and how, and I'm there in the ER last night just being like, I just want it all to stop. Can anyone just like come stitch up my daughter? We're there for 7 hours. Nothing happened other than some stitches and they put her arm in a sling. I'm like, come on. I don't know. We're, it's so, all this technology to save us time. Is it really saving us any time?
Right.
Or are we just, you know, I don't know.
And is saving time really the ultimate goal? You know, like yeah. why do we need to save so much time indefinitely?
Right. When it, like the most magical nights I feel like I have are the ones where like, you don't even worry about time and you could just be chilling with people you love for hours on end. And the time just kind of seems to stop. And I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and just to give listeners a little bit of context, me and Mike have been talking about doing a podcast about porn. So we had planned for weeks that we wanted to talk about this because, especially for ex-Mormons, it's like a very, you know, it's something that a lot of people are very, have a lot of different opinions about, I guess. But, you know, we were supposed to record yesterday and then I ended up having like a really sort of, I guess, raw kind of day. And so we kind of changed gears, and it does feel like I feel a lot like slower, you know, like I've slowed down. I've kind of like, I guess, tapped back into, I don't know. Have you ever had like an experience that on the surface, it seems very small, but suddenly it's like a doorway into like your unconscious material? Where like maybe you read something or you see something or you have an interaction with someone. And then it's just like this portal opens up and all of this unconscious material like floods out. And it's like you're seeing yourself in this new way and you're having all of this self-awareness and connecting all of these dots. And it's like very humbling mm-hmm. and kind of like jarring, but also grounding in a way. Has this ever happened to you?
I mean, maybe, I don't know. This sounds fascinating. I mean, I've had moments where it feels like reality is not what it seems to be and what's happening with, you know, or like, or yeah, a seemingly little thing will all of a sudden spur something or bring up a material that's like, where is this coming from? All of a sudden, is that kind of what
right. you mean? Yep. Yeah. Yep. That's exactly what I'm saying. Where it's just, it seems like something small. And then all this stuff is surfacing that you're like all these old wounds, you know, it's like a full blown trigger, you know, like an actual trigger where it's small, but then underneath all this stuff is like coming to the surface.
Well, and what's hard about that? So yeah, I'm on board with this for sure. So is because the thing's so small, the trigger is small. we can easily get in our heads and be like, well, I shouldn't be feeling like this. Like, why am I, I'm overreacting. I'm crazy. I'm overreacting. And that only, you know, minimalizes it. And we're not there with all the emotions coming up. And, so it sounds like you had one of those yesterday.
Yeah. Yes. It was one of those moments where I did something that was really, 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 really stupid. And it was like a thoughtless moment that was just like an instant regret. And it ended up being fine, but it's like it could have gone south. Like it could have gone very south and been very bad. And I was just, it was so humbling, and it brought so much of like my Mormon conditioning to the surface. It was kind of crazy to me, like how much was triggered just from this one thing. And, you know, all of this stuff started coming up around like perfectionism, around sin, you know, like the concept of sin, you know, or punishment, the concept of punishment, conditional love, you know, only being loved if you behave a certain way, just all of my old Mormon conditioning. You know, it's like it obviously triggered like a very young part of me that was still holding on to a lot of that stuff.
This is interesting because I feel like in the last 6 months, I've had about three of these moments that I think you're talking about that like, and some, I don't even know if I can share the story on one of these yet.
I know. I was thinking about this. I'm like, I don't think I can say, you know, what happened, but I will talk about, you know, everything around the fact.
Yeah. I know that, you know, podcasts are so much better when we can story tell, you know, and not skirt around it, but this one I'm not ready to tell yet, but it brought up a feelings of, holy shit, I've been caught. It's a lot of shame. A lot of like, how could I be so stupid? How could I be so careless? How could I put myself at risk? Even though it didn't feel risk, I don't know. It was just kind of like, kind of snapping back to reality, being like, what? I was like, almost like, was I under a spell? Like, come on, wake up. And then the intensity of the emotions came coming up. One of them is one I guess I'm thinking of. I actually called Doug and I'm like, Doug, my life is over. He's like, well, okay, well, slow down. Nothing happened. My life is not over. My life's fine. But the intensity of the feelings that came up were so strong, and so much kind of like shame, being caught. And look, I know the way I'm making this sounds make it sounds like I did something awful, but I didn't. But the thing I did was so small. But the magnitude of the feeling, so big.
Yeah. That's very, very similar to how I was feeling, where it was just like, yeah, like all this critical, self-critical talk started coming in. Just like, that was so stupid. It felt like it snapped me back to reality. It almost felt like it was this adolescent part of me that was just kind of like not being careful, and that was just being like, it was just so dumb. It was so dumb. And what I did actually was bad. You know, it was like in my book, and then it brought up all these feelings around judgment, and then, you know, the ideas of right and wrong, the ideas of good and bad and all of that. And it made me start connecting these dots that like I had lived my life in a way that I didn't want anyone to ever be able to look at anything that I did and say, oh, that is wrong. That is like openly and overtly wrong. And I had sort of cased myself in this shell of perfectionism to protect myself so that no one could ever look at me and say, oh, that you did a wrong thing. You did a bad thing. And, you know, what happened yesterday was relatively small, but it like shattered all of this open for me, where, you know, suddenly I realized that there was still a part of me that was othering people who did things that were legitimately wrong, you know, not just like, oh, I made a little, you know, whatever, it's not a big deal, but people who like legitimately do things that are wrong. There was still a part of me that was like, oh, that's not me. That's not me. I'm over here. And I can have compassion for you, and I can, you know, love yourself and forgive yourself and whatever. But then it's like, when you're on the other side of that coin, it makes you realize suddenly how much judgment you still hold for yourself and for people and all of these, you know, all of this religious conditioning.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sitting with this for a minute. Cause, you know, when I said, I feel like we're just dancing around these stories.
I know. We're going to have to hop off this episode and then share our darkest secrets.
You know, like, I guess it was something. So when I say it wasn't my finest moment, but at the end of the day, it was pretty harmless, you know? And then yeah, I blown yeah. out of proportion. It was pretty
same,
harmless.
Same. Yeah.
And for me, it helped me. I don't know. The more I'm just realizing that, like, we're all human. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. And I don't know. Did I go there too fast that we're just all human and we're all like apes trying to, I don't know.
Yeah. No, I mean, and this is all the conditioning that it brought up in me, where it was like, man, what is it that I'm afraid of? Do I feel like I can't forgive myself? Because I know that I have integrity. I know that I want to be, you know, I don't want to do any harm in the world. So is it just that I can't forgive myself for messing up? Or is it some type of fear of what other people would think, you know, fear of condemnation, you know, or judgment or, you know, I mean, I feel like it's one thing to be like in religion, to be like, oh, you know, kind of have this fear of God in you, mm-hmm. where you're afraid of doing, you know, something wrong because you don't want to go to hell, whatever. But it's like, even aside from that, I have like a real fear of human beings, because human beings will condemn you. Human beings will punish you. Human beings will do, you know, whatever, if they think that you've done something wrong. And then it got me thinking about all my beliefs around relationship and, you know, what it means to actually be unconditionally loving. And have I ever felt that in my life? Have I literally ever felt like I could make shitty mistakes and that people would still love me? And ultimately the answer was no, which is why I had held myself to such a standard, because I was so afraid of that, of losing that love of the people around me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was conditioned into us very young. And, you know, I've had several experiences recently where, you know, I don't know, this thought that I'm not for everyone, and maybe that's okay, you know, kind of deal. Mm-hmm. But I know that's easier said than done. You know, especially just realizing that people are going to project through me and on me. And it's more, I don't know. I feel like I'm skirting around whether I want to share my story or not.
I know. I kind of am too, but I feel like if I share it, I'm not going to want to share the episode. I'm going to be like, no, keep that private.
I know. I'm doing the same thing.
People are going to just be so annoyed by this.
I know. It's kind of like we're skirting around these things, but maybe they can just resonate with the archetypal feelings of what we're talking about. Right.
Yeah.
Because for me, as a Mormon, I'm realizing how much I always wanted to please everyone else and always wanted, like, how much value, self-worth I got from how others perceived me and how much I outsourced that. I mean, even Last night I had a cool dream where one of my bishops, it was one of my last bishops out here in California. He was in my dream and he was leaving the church in my dream. Now this is one of the most straight laced Mormon guys I know. And in sitting with this dream this morning, I was kind of like, you know, what could it mean? Oh, in the, here's the flip on the dream that I thought was kind of cool. He was, in the dream, since he was leaving the church, he was like thinking, he was congratulating me or like honoring me as like a pioneer, not an apostate. And, where I'm going with that is that the bishop for me is how I've outsourced that approval on someone else. You know, I thought I needed to go through, like I used to have this big scrupulosity, confession, compulsion. It was almost like an OCD need to confess, which really what that was that I didn't know if I was okay. I needed to go to someone else to tell me you're okay. And I couldn't just be like, oh no, I'm okay. Like, you know, and I feel like that dream was showing a shift that finally, maybe I'm beginning to own my inner bishop who tells me if I'm okay or not. And yeah. know when I've crossed my own moral compass, because I think that's part of what I'm figuring out right now is when I was in the church, I outsourced that bishop to someone else. When I left the church, I was like, oh, fuck that. You know, it's all a lie. Like all these restrictions I'd put on myself. Why? And now I'm realizing that, no, I do have an internal yes or no. There are things I don't want to do and things I want to do. And getting in touch with that part of me that's like, no, I don't want to do that. Or no, we didn't want to do this. Why did we do this?
Mm-hmm.
And not in necessarily a shaming way. Once you kind of get through those initial moments of that, you know, when it surfaces all the shame, you can kind of get to a spot where it's like, okay, now I know this, I crossed my own moral boundary here.
Right.
And I don't know, there's something about the more I'm getting comfortable with that, the less I'm worrying about what people think about what I do. But it's been a big process.
Yeah, I almost feel like as Mormons, you don't ever really learn through experience. You just learn what to avoid, what to do, what to not do. There's not really room for exploration. And so that was something that came up for me yesterday as well, was this shame of like, oh, you should have known better. And this shame of like, having to learn through experience and feeling like, oh, it was a learning experience. Yes. Like that was stupid, whatever, you know, I learned, I'm growing from this, but the shame that I had to learn through experience. And it's like, that's how the real world operates. You learn through trial and error. And most people, if they're not growing up in a high demand religion, they're doing this in their teenage years. Yeah. And here we are in our 30s and 40s and whenever we leave the church, going through our adolescence as adults and feeling like there's part of me that really is just very clumsy and experiencing things in a very messy way. And that wants to rebel, that wants to act out, that wants to experiment and explore and see what's going to happen so I can find my own moral compass. And that the only way to really find that is through experience and allowing myself, you know, it's like a total reframe from the way that we were raised to experience things and totally fuck it up and not feel shame. And be like, oh, okay, this is how it is to be a human. Because in my mind, it's like, you piece of shit, you know, like, why didn't you know better before you did the thing that you did? And I just picture like younger me, adolescent, teenage me, who had all of this stuff just buried. And now it's coming out. Now I'm experiencing it. And the process is very, very messy.
Have you seen the movie Poor Things?
Yes. I sure have. It was fantastic. But funny story, I saw that movie with my brother.
Oh, yeah. I think we talked about this, huh?
Yeah. There's like 90 sex scenes and neither of us had any idea, but luckily he's like super cool and we laughed the whole time, but I was like, I probably could have picked someone else to go with.
I didn't know there was so much sex in it. And so yeah. I asked my 19-year-old son, like, Hey, I'm going to this movie. You want to come with me? And he's like, no. And I'm so glad he said no. So I went alone, which I'm so glad I did. But I bring that up because, Emma Stone in the movie. I forgot what her name is in the movie.
Baxter.
Yeah. Bella. Is it Bella? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Baxter. Okay. Yeah. It's almost the reverse of how we were raised, right? Where like, we were so much in our head and so much in a control and so restrictive in our body. And she's been in the reverse where her brain is like operating at the beginning of the film as like an infant and then an adolescent. But yet she's a fully formed a woman with urges and sexuality and every, you know, all the physical impulses. But what was good for me in that movie is see how she just approached it with this wide-eyed wonder and curiosity about her body and her experiences. And like, kind of just, she didn't know shame, you know, she kind of learns it through the film and gets through it or whatever. But like at the beginning, she's like, there's just no shame in this. And this whole thing about you should have known better. How do you really know unless you experience it?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think we can. And so it is frustrating now to have to learn these things in my 40s when I have three teenagers, you know, and I don't want to be embarrassed or be some news story about like this 40-year-old who should have known better, but didn't. But at the same time, unless I put myself out there, and especially now, you know, being single, it's a whole different ballgame. And I haven't been single since I was a 21-year-old return missionary living in Logan, Utah. Yeah. And the internet was still in its infancy. Cell phones were still flip phones. There were no dating apps. There were none of this, no social media. And I'm finding I'm so lost in like the Los Angeles dating scene. I'm like, I don't even know how to navigate this shit. And so a lot of it, I just haven't, because I'm just, and every time I feel like, okay, I'm ready to kind of put myself out there, I feel like I do something stupid. And then it's like, well, I'm never doing that again. I'm not putting myself out there again. But then it's like, well, I need to. So
yeah. I don't know. This is very relevant to my secret story that I'm not sharing, because it was an interaction with a single male. Mm-hmm. And I was literally like, oh my dear God, like I wanted to crawl under a rock, you know, and like never, mm-hmm. never come out again. And he was very like understanding, and his, you know, his response was very, you know, like whatever, but he could have very easily just been like, just totally gone the other direction. And it just got me thinking, like, there's a part of me that feels like, yes, I want to have grace for myself. And yes, you know, yes, I want to explore. And yes, I want to be, you know, all the things that I did in my adolescent years, but there is something about it, like doing it when you're an adult, mm-hmm. that you feel like you really should know better. You know what I mean? Oh, and it's like,
yeah. I mean, even with, you know, I feel this way. And even in terms of the podcast, I mean, hosting a podcast called Mormons on Mushrooms, and I'm in my 40s and I have a business career. It's like, kind of like, Mike, should you know better? Like, and, I don't know what to say to that other than like, I don't know better, I guess.
Right.
And, it would have been, there's a lot of regret in not being able to go through this in my earlier years, a lot mm-hmm. of regret. And here's where I get tripped up, is I don't know how much of the things, you know, the like impulses or desires I have now are authentic or if it's a try to make up for lost time, or if I'm acting from a shadow or trauma response, or if that I legitimately want certain experiences and I'm withholding those experiences because of my prudish upbringing. And I don't know what is what, you know, like, okay, I'll get a little vulnerable here. You know, since my separation, my sex life hasn't been very robust, you know, I've had, you know, whatever experiences here and there, but like, I don't know if I'm holding myself back for more experiences. Or if I'm also like, no, I'm picky. And I don't know if that pickiness is coming from a core part of me that's like, look, I value who I share deep intimacy with. I'm picky who I share that type of intimacy with. And I want to be picky. Or if that's like, oh, that's just Mormon Mike feeling like, you know, purity. That's just purity culture kicking right in. And because I'm still just as sexual as, I mean, I've always been a very sexual being, and I don't know the answer to that, but I don't know if I will know the answer unless I put myself out there and have certain experiences where I go, oh, you know what? That was fun, but, it wasn't what I was looking for.
Yeah.
But until I do that, how do I know? I'm just guessing whether it's a trauma response or if it's really something I want.
Right. And I feel like that's such a Mormon thing to do, is to try to figure it out without actually having to experience it. Because I do the same thing where I'm like, oh, I don't know where this is coming from or what this is, what part of me is wanting this thing. So I'm just going to not do anything until I can figure it out in my brain and know the right decision to make, you know, like that's such a Mormon thing, where like going back to poor things, there was no inhibitions, you know, she had no inhibitions because she, you know, she had like a child brain or whatever. And so it was just like, imagine if you could approach life with that level of curiosity. And if you allowed not only yourself, but the people around you to also have that level of, like, it was safe enough to explore in that way, because we're so afraid of hurting ourselves. We're so afraid of hurting other people. We're so afraid of doing something wrong, because what's it going to mean about me? What are they going to say about me? It's just like this whole dance that everyone feeds into that makes it feel like it's not safe to fuck up.
Man, I really think everyone should watch that movie, and I hope, you know, like, all the sex scenes don't turn off people, you know, hopefully by ex-Mormons now you're okay with some sex scenes, but like, cause I think approaching the world through her eyes, it felt very refreshing to me. The way she was just like, there's no shame. This feels good. Yeah, there's no shame in this. And it's really putting me through a number, because I just also, you know, I talked about the technology class I just finished. Well, I've also been doing this alchemy class. And this, in alchemy, they kind of teach that there's a compulsive nature to the instincts, which we might get into when we do the episode about porn, right? Where porn, and along with other things, can be a very compulsive thing. Now, not always, but we have a compulsive nature to our instincts. And in contrast to Christianity and like Mormonism, ancient alchemists didn't talk about like repressing the instincts or shaming the instincts as the devil, but they didn't practice like a mindless expression of the instincts. It was like allowing the instinct to surface, allowing like you almost to be consumed by the passion and you almost purify the compulsive nature of the instinct. But then you're not a monk living on a mountain. You're still living in the world. So then you still go and you engage with the world, but now you have a more centered approach to aligned approach and how you want to express the instinct. And I was resonating with a lot of that.
Yeah.
And there's a part of me that's like, but I get it, but do I really know until I try? too. And so I'm a little bit iffy on, I mean, I resonate with some parts of alchemy with that, but then I also resonate with Bella Baxter, who's like, just like, oh yeah, I'll just go express the instinct and then be like, oh yeah, nope. Don't want to do that. Or now I want to do something else. Or now I want to do this. And now that I've scratched that itch, it doesn't itch anymore. So let me go to the next thing I want and live life that way. Instead of being like, I'm consumed by my passion and I'm just going to be sit here and let it burn within me until it burns up. And then I'm like, okay, I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I feel like, and especially as like, I keep saying the way that we were raised, it almost feels like we were kind of like there. I mean, I'll say I've said it 50 times, but there was no room for adolescence, you know? And so it's like, how do you like, what is even the human experience then? You know what I mean? Like, did we really just come here to like, did I come here to like be a monk and not live and do anything? Like maybe some people did, but it's, then that's, there's nothing wrong with that. But like, Is that what I want? You know, like, do I want to continue on this pattern of let's avoid actually living because I don't want to do anything wrong. I don't want to be, it's way more vulnerable. It is so much more vulnerable to just be like, I'm going to live life and I'm going to love myself through it. And hopefully people will also love me through it, you know, at least a few.
I'm resonating with this so hard, and I hope other listeners are too, because I do know there's also a group of ex-Mormons, which I'm kind of envious of in a way, you know, like the ex-Mormon Rumspringa kind of deal with like, no. Have you heard that term? Do you know what a Rumspringa is?
No.
Rumspringa is like a, what do you call them? The Amish people.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
When their youth reaches a certain age, they have like, I don't know if it's like a 1 or 2 year period where they get to go out and live in the world and do whatever they want. And then they choose to come back or not. But it's basically like, there's no, you've lived this like highly restrictive life for most of your life. And then now it's like, you're in the world and you, everything, anything's fair game. And I feel like there is an ex-Mormon Rumspringa when like you leave the church and you're like, whoa, all these things that I've been denying myself are now like at my fingertips. And there's no good or bad about them. You know, I get to decide. And I feel like there's some ex-Mormons who navigate that really a lot more openly than I do. And I'm a little envious of that. And I'm also a little judgy sometimes too about it. You know, I'll be honest. Like sometimes I'm like, you guys, you're acting just like a bunch of like repressed, horny 17-year-olds in 40-year-old bodies. And then I'm like, well, you know what? I am also that. So, like, and so there's an envy, but then also, but then I'm like, but I'm also, I know me. I also know I'm a pretty picky person and a choosy person.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm hoping this resonates with at least some of our listeners because it's resonating with me. And I think maybe there's a lot in this stage with us or experiencing similar things.
Yeah. I feel like if there's one thing that I learned from this small interaction that somehow just completely changed my life yesterday, it's that I just feel like I don't know anything. And, you know, we can get on podcasts and just be like, I have so much to say. I got so much to say. Everybody wants to hear what I got to say. You know, it's just kind of, it's a little bit absurd sometimes because I feel like there's parts of me that are still so young, you know, like parts of me do feel somewhat wise or, you know, in my own life and from my own experiences, not saying that I would have wisdom for anyone else, but then there's parts of me that are very, very, just feel very young still. And the whole experience in general was just so, so, so humbling to just remind me that like, you can't, it's like things I've always known, but it's like, you can't make blanket statements about what someone needs in their healing process. You can't make blanket statements about what someone should or shouldn't be doing or what their path should look like. You can't claim to know things. It's like, the more you know, the less you know, because you realize like, I feel like the path, the true path of like individuation is just one ass whooping after another, where finally you get to the point where you're like, oh shit, you know, like I actually just don't really know anything. And I'm just here with everybody else just slewing a bunch of words out on the internet and being like, well, hopefully somebody likes that. If not, I mean, I guess it was a good conversation with Mike.
Well, I mean, I think we're all the blind leading the blind, right? Especially, right. You know, when you walk away from the straight and narrow path. And yeah, and it's interesting, the more I walk it, the more blind I feel.
Right.
You know, and it's like, do I really have wisdom to share, or I'm just like, no, I'm just fucking around and finding out, you know?
Right. Exactly.
Like all of us.
I know.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I feel. I feel like there's a, and this is my little personal piece that I'll share. Just that, like, there is such a superiority complex in Mormonism, which everybody knows. And for me personally, like, deconstructing that piece, I mean, it makes sense that anybody that knows my path of how I like came out of the church and my process that I've been in the last 3 years, it really has just been like one ass whooping after another. And I'm like, this honestly makes a lot of sense, because it's been awful, but it's like, there was a part of me that was so ingrained in that superiority that I really, really needed to see that was a delusion, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's also a gift, even though it's been awful. And I keep thinking, like, when is this going to end?
When you talk about the ass whooping, is it just yourself kicking your ass?
I mean, it depends on how you define self, you know. Uh-huh. If it's been things that have happened just continuously, like one thing after another, where it's like, it almost feels like serendipitous, like where I'm like, there's no way that this many things have happened in this short amount of time. Like, I remember reading this quote once that was like, you know, like, the good thing is that if your life gets really, really bad, like so, so, so bad, you know that it's like, it's something out of your hands that is like orchestrating this. It's something along those lines, where it's like, it gets so bad that it feels fated, you know?
Yeah.
And that's how it's felt in the last 3 years, where I'm just like, again, you know, like something else. And it feels very like, it feels like it's taking me somewhere.
I mean, I feel like you're going places. I mean, you've been going places.
The only place it's taking me is just so that I'm not a self-righteous Mormon girl anymore, which I'm happy about that.
So going back to like my inner bishop, or the bishop inside of me, right? Because I asked that question about the ass flipping, because sometimes it does feel like life or nature or source or something is kind of like, but I don't think I think it's in a different way. I think there have been times when I feel all this fear for something I've done or something, you know, like, and I'm realizing that there is no one there to punish me but me, in a way. Or there's like when I let go of my own inner judgments towards myself about it, I can almost laugh about it and then be like, okay. But then also know that, yeah, I want to take a different direction next time and a different path. And maybe I don't have to kick my ass about it so much, you know, right, afterward, or I don't have to be so hard on myself.
Yeah. I was having this exact realization today, where it was like, I was doing like some parts work with myself, you know, like connecting to the parts of me that were just like really beating me up. And it kind of came down to this, almost like this condemnation from God, like this fear of God that was like deeply, deeply ingrained. And I was like, well, if I don't believe that consciously anymore, then who is it that's punishing me? It's just me, you know?
Yeah.
And even though I knew that, like, I could see that I was punishing me, there was still like this, it was like a core belief in there, somewhere in there, that like I needed to be punished or something, you know? And so I was sitting with that, and I don't know that I'd ever really made contact with that part of me before yesterday, and kind of realizing how deeply that indoctrination runs, that like people need to be punished for the things that they do wrong, you know, even though in reality, we're all just punishing ourselves and punishing each other.
And when we have that grace, you know, where it's, cause you're hitting something there. Cause why do I feel like punishing even helps? You know what I mean? Like, right. If I berate myself or get down, you know, if I do something I didn't want to do, and then does punishing even help me not do it again? And I think, you know, the answer is no. I think there's a recognition of like, you know what has helped actually? And maybe this is a little wisdom I can share, but it's not wisdom for me. It's wisdom from my coach, Tracy, that like, so a couple years ago, man, I really wish I could tell specific stories, but I cannot tell these stories. So sorry, but you know, I did something that I was really, really beating myself up over. And, you know, she was really good about it in the sense of like, okay, you think about the parts work, you connect so easily to the part that didn't want to do that and wants to shame and wants to, you know, what about the part that did? What were they seeking? What was that part seeking in all of this? And it was a good moment for me because when I connected to that part, it was like, oh, I get why I did it. And the intention was so much more innocent than I ever expected, if that makes sense.
Yes.
It was, and when I've done this since, this practice since, it's usually either a desire to connect, a desire for someone to see my pain, to be seen, to be witnessed, to be felt, to be connected with someone, to, you know, there's those core, it goes down to this core need that because I wasn't getting that need met in a way that I would, my whole like self would have been aligned on. And it was like, oh, then once I connected to that intention, I'm like, oh, there's nothing here to shame. I mean, that's a very valid need. And I get why that need, why I did what I did to get it. And now I recognize, okay, next time there's a different way I can get the same need met and not upset the part of me that's gonna like freak out and shame.
Yeah.
And that helped. That really did help. And so with that said, it also taught me that punishing myself wasn't doing any good. I'm just shaming this part for something that was actually a very innocent need. There was nothing to be shamed.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it helped. Yeah.
Right. And I think we have a tendency to do that
sometimes.
You feel like punishment helps you?
Well, I feel like there's still a part of me that's like, you know, like, yeah, so I kind of know that, but then I still get into it where I punish myself, you know, there's right. That. Like, yeah. Uh-huh.
It's like, you think you need it for some reason. Like, and then I was like asking myself these questions. I'm like, well, if I'm not going to punish me, then who is, you know? And then I just like, feel like there has to be some kind of like accountability or justice or whatever, even though I was like clearly dragging myself through the mud for it already, you know? And it's like, we condemn these parts of us. I like totally agree with what you're saying where, I mean, I actually did the same thing yesterday too. I connected to that part of me and I was like, what was that coming from? Where did that? Yeah. And it was the same. It was like this very innocent part of me that was just like very young, you know, everything that you said. And then you're kind of like, well, then what is it that this part of me actually is needing, you know? And am I resourced enough internally to offer that to myself? Will I allow myself to offer myself what I need? Or am I going to continue to withhold my own love from myself because I don't feel like I deserve it, you know?
Man, it's nice to have other adolescent adults to connect with. And
Oh, you know? Yeah, I know. I feel like sometimes maybe I should stop doing it like in the public eye, you know?
I know. I mean, that's kind of what we've done. I mean, you're more public than I am.
Yeah.
And, you know, I still kind of maintain in the shadows a little bit, even though, I don't know, starting to show my face more. It'll get more and more. But the public eye is scary because I've realized, you know, and this is one, yeah, should I share this story? People know if they listen to the podcast, like when we went in a different direction, when it wasn't working with Shalice anymore, we went in a different creative direction because she wanted to go in a creative way, a different way. We had creative differences.
Yeah.
I knew how it was going to look. And I knew the heat we were going to get for it.
Right.
And I also knew that, look, I knew this was the right decision for me in my path. And so a lot of the comments hurt, but then a lot of the comments were like, look, I get it. Fuck the patriarchy. You know, I can, yeah. And if you need to project that through me, you know, I can take it. Yeah. I can hold that projection. And so there's something about being in the public eye, realizing you're going to hold a lot of projections or a lot of people, you know, maybe I don't need to hold it. Maybe that's a wrong word. Maybe I don't need to hold that projection, but you are for someone, right? People are going to project all sorts of things onto you and you have no idea what they're projecting or what. And you got to kind of just be like, yeah, I guess that's part of it. I mean, that's what we're all kind of projecting onto each other all the time. And you kind of lose that. You just realize that you become almost a conduit for it. And I mean, look at Taylor Swift. Like, look how much projection from, you know, the range from like a goddess, which I tend to go more to that side of it. Like that she's like channeling the archetypal, like, I don't know, she's killing it. To just the amount of like hate speech she gets as well, you know, it's a lot.
Yeah.
For one human to, and so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel like even just the small, tiny, 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 tiny piece of public platform that I have, that experience alone has made me very aware of how I view people in public positions. And I try really, really hard to abstain from any sort of like cancel culture or like this person did, you know, I mean, it seems like every other week you're hearing like, oh, this person claims to be a guru, but did you hear about their past? You know, and I'm just like, I just do not participate in any of that because they become scapegoats, you know, and it's just like, if you're in the public eye, it's so easy for people to just like drag you through the mud because they're projecting so much onto you. And there's no room for humanness. There's no room for humanness in society, really. So
even without being in the public eye, if you've left the church, you are in the public eye in some way, like in your ward, in your family,
right,
within your neighborhood, in some circle, you are in their eye, right? And there's a line from a Mindy Gledhill song that she wrote when she left the church that is so resonates with me so strong. She says like, spectators. Okay. I'm not going to,
you actually this, sing it for us.
Yeah. I can do that some other time. So spectators come from far away. Like they have tickets to the circus on a Saturday. Caught like a child in a parade, you spread your arms, but when you're wounded, you can't fly away. And that just hits me so hard. There's so many, you feel the projection of my Mormon family. And that's why I think that dream last night was significant. Cause I remember feeling the projection of that bishop at the time.
Yeah.
And being like, And then I feel like there are a lot of people who are watching as if I'm on parade,
right,
waiting for my life to fail so they can, it can reinforce their beliefs in the Mormon church. And yet I'm wounded. Like,
exactly.
I'm an adolescent in a 40-year-old body. So of course I'm going to fuck things up. And so, yeah, enjoy the show, enjoy the carnival, enjoy the freak show, you know?
Like, yeah.
Grab the popcorn and enjoy, because of course I'm going to mess things up. Of course I'm going to, you know, get separated and like do weird things and like, I don't know, start a podcast about Mormons on mushrooms. And, you know, you get a front row ticket to the carnival. So come.
Yeah.
Enjoy. Yeah.
I know. I feel like most ex-Mormons can very much relate to that. Just feeling that's why so many people are so private about it. You know, it's like they don't want people to know what's going on or how they actually feel or whatever, because the amount of scrutiny and you just kind of get like put on display, you know, whether you want to or not.
Yeah.
But we probably are going about it the wrong way. Like you said, talking about it on a podcast about mushrooms, we're not really helping our case.
Well, but then that's also the, you know, the public perception of mushrooms, right? Like,
Yeah.
I mean, if you really relate to mushrooms if you really have a relationship with mushrooms, well, there's no shame in I mean, that's the coolest podcast name ever.
You know? Yeah. I actually had someone, did you see that? We had Bob on here. Remember when Bob came on? And he said that Mormons on Mushrooms was the coolest podcast name he'd ever heard.
I mean, I agree with him. I accept that. Yeah.
Me too.
Did we resolve anything on this?
I don't know. I feel like, we should probably have some type of like, let's wrap it up and remember to choose the right. Return with honor.
We don't have to end with a Full House moment, but I'm wondering if, I don't know. Do you feel
should
like
we end with a prayer?
Yeah, we should, right?
I do feel like, you know, overall for me, like, well, first of all, just thanks for letting me switch gears and make it a little more vulnerable today. I still do want to talk about porn. So, that's coming in the future.
You know what I was thinking? I think this is a good, like, intro, like a good before we talk about porn, because we're going to talk about it from all sorts of different weird angles and in a way,
if you will.
We're gonna go through all the different porn positions, but in a way of like, look, we're just people trying to figure out our life, and we don't know what's up or what's down, but like, here's our experience with this, you know, this I wouldn't know what the word with this is our experience with porn.
Right.
And, you know, yeah.
Right. And I really actually do appreciate leaving room for the question and not necessarily having to be like, here's the answer, because so much of life is just getting comfortable in the question and being like, here's a thought about this thing and here's another one. And, you know, and then just kind of being like, well, I guess we're just swimming in it, rather than, you know, tying everything up with a little bow, like we, you know, sometimes feel like we have to.
Yeah, because you know what? I'm even talking, you know, we're talking about projections. Like people listening, I can see them going a lot of different directions with this. Like, kind of like one, the extreme of like, Mike and Stephanie, you've lost your way. Get back on the straight and narrow path. Can't you see that this is what you need to be doing? You guys are in the midst of darkness and you're lost. To the other extreme of like, Mike and Stephanie, just go get out there and go wild and have a good time. Right. And then also, I think there are people who be like, "Oh, I feel exactly this way," and so thank you for sharing. So we're gonna get the gamut of it, and that's you know, come with me, always welcome.
Okay, well, thank you. Do you have any closing remarks? Anything you need to plug?
Doug and I. So it's gonna be a loose plug, but we're gonna plug it most likely on April 20th coming up at some unknown venue. We haven't picked yet. It could be April 20th, but it could be May 20 around that time. But upcoming, either in April or May, but most likely April. And 420 is a great time to throw a concert. We're going to put together a concert in the Salt Lake area. And we've got our lineup of like songs we want to do, depending on how much we can like put in production wise, it's going to be a good time. So stay tuned. We'll have all the details on either our Instagram later or in future episodes of the podcast coming up. But I did want to plug it because it's coming up and we always do things last minute. I mean, we've got less, I mean, it's like 22 days away and we haven't even found a venue or anything. So like, but wherever it happens, wherever it is, it's going to be a good time and a good show. So,
well, the only thing I'll say to that is that you should do April 19th because I'm going to be out of town on the 20th. All right. So just make it the 19th and pretend that it's the 20th.
All right. Well, I just meant like the weekend ish around the 20th. When is the 19th?
The 19th is Friday.
Oh yeah. You know what? It actually probably might be on the 19th.
So, great. Then I'll be there.
Right. 19th. We'll shoot for the 19th. And if it ends up being the 20th, we'll miss you. But like, just so people know, it'll probably be sometime that weekend, but we'd love to see anyone there. It'll probably be like more of an intimate venue, like a yoga studio or something, but getting back to some tribal kind of beats and rhythms and some folky cosmic folk flavor country. Good times. Yeah.
Sounds like a good time. Okay.
Anything you want to plug?
No, not really.
Are you open for coaching right now?
I am open for coaching right now. I opened my books back up. Yeah, that's basically all I was going to say. But no news other than that. Just thanks for listening to me ramble again.
And if they want if people, because yeah, how do they find you?
Oh, just Stephanie Ann again on Instagram. Stephanie Ann again. Because I've been born again through the Lord Jesus Christ. You can find me on Stephanie Ann again, and then you can book me through there.
And if you're not following Stephanie Ann again on Instagram, like what are you even doing with your life at this point? You know?
So. Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. This has been delightful.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mike. Okay.
Now give it now. Hey, Mike.
Yeah.
Let's actually come up with an identity. Like what's the name of the identity that you're going to read this one as?
His name is Cool Joe.
Cool Joe, baby. Here it comes, ladies and gentlemen.
The first name that came to me when you said that was Patrick, but I want to read it as Patrick.
Dude, I'll do it as Patrick. You do it as Cool Joe.
Okay.
You ready?
Maybe you start it and I'll do the
next part. All right, here we go. You ready?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening. As a reminder, the very best way to support this podcast is to just head on over to patreon.com/Mormons on Mushrooms.
There you're going to find bonus content, fun episodes, other shit.
Girl, we're talking about shit you have not heard before.
Never. Mankind has never heard these things before. So go on over to Patreon. But we'd also love it if you gave us a review. Just head over to Apple and give us a quick love over there. Quick love. Quickie.
Just a little bit of love on Apple. Listen, if you're listening on Spotify, that's cool too. Put up a 5-star if you liked it. If you didn't, keep your mouth shut.
Just maybe put up a whoa, yo, Flavor Country.
We love Flavor Country. By the way, Mike and I also accept just free pure money, and you can do that at Venmo. Mike, hit him with the deets.
Just put them in our pocket. Just give us some money at Mushmore, M-U-S-H-M-O-R, on Venmo, and we'll use it to buy some kombuchas. Just have a good time.
M-U-S-H-M-O-R. What up? Peace.
Give a fucking yes.